Blog Talk Radio.
Assalamu alaikum. Peace be unto you all. Welcome once again to Elevated Places Network. And tonight we present Ask Minister Ava with myself, your host, Ava Muhammad. And normally I would be joined by my illustrious co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, but he had a very important commitment tonight, and he was unable to be on the air. He has suffered a great deal of chiding from myself and the members of the Elevated Places team, because one of the things he's known for in the years that we've been on the air, as well as our executive producer, Sister Rona Muhammad, is being here. And he has stepped in for me countless times when the nation's duties or sometimes family situations called me away. And we are truly going to miss him tonight. But as they say, the show must go on. And so before we get into it, which will be shortly, we have a really exciting program. We have a very critical and engaging subject for you. But before I say anything else to you, I say Happy Savior's Day 2022. This is, oh my God, I've been with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. It will be 40 years in September of this year. And I cannot think of a Savior's Day that is more critical, more important than the one coming up. And certainly all of us, not only in the faith community of the Nation of Islam, but Black people here in America and around the world, love this man. And we have not seen very much of him during this pandemic. We haven't seen much of each other in person. And we are so thrilled that he is coming in person to address the world at Mosque Mariam. The message will be available live on NOI.org, NOI.org, Sunday, February 27th, 1 p.m. Central Time. Keep that in mind, 1 p.m. Central Time. And the message, the name that he gave his message, is the Swan Song. So tune in to NOI.org on Sunday, the 27th of February at 1 p.m. Central Time. Make sure you get your Final Call newspaper this week. The front page tells us what we unfortunately know and will never change, because as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan has said to us, As long as we live with white people, we will live under white people. And the headlines are police violence still unchecked. With all that took place in the wake of the murder of our brother last year, and I'm sorry, I just had a brain freeze on my brother who was killed last, whose murder, the murder trial was last year, and it'll come to me soon, but who attracted worldwide, whose death attracted worldwide attention, George Floyd, it just came back up in my brain, our brother George Floyd, in the wake of all of that, the police are still killing black people at the same rate, but it is important that you get your Final Call newspaper. There's a major story. Allah God is on his post. I don't know about us being on ours, but he's on his. This weather is devastating, devastating. And there has been a major storm system running diagonally across this nation for about 2,000 miles. And one thing that you don't hear in the news are the public assessments. You have to go and research it. You cannot imagine, beloved, what it is costing the U.S. government and these businesses to deal with the natural disasters that have been coming one after the other. And so pay attention to the news. Remember to read your COVID section in the paper. The message from the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, the message from the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and from Brother Minister Jibril Muhammad and Mother Tynetta Muhammad. And then, of course, the news itself. But if you are black in America, the Final Call newspaper is a must. So get your hard copy and also subscribe to the digital edition of the Final Call newspaper at finalcalldigital.com, finalcalldigital.com. I do want to remind you that we have, well, not remind you, but announce to you that we have a very special program tonight. Many of you know by now that on Tuesday a lawsuit was filed against the NFL as well as the New York Football Giants, the Miami Dolphins, and 29 John Doe teams by former head coach of the Miami Dolphins, Brian Flores. And we'll talk about the details of that because we have a brilliant panel tonight for you, roundtable discussion. And these are names known to you, their record for strength and brilliance is well known to you. And we'll be introducing them shortly. And one of them is our dear sister, who hosts on Tuesday nights, every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. Central. She hosts her own program on Elevated Places Network. And that program is called A Time for Justice. And if you have not been keeping up with those episodes, you can go to blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces and pull up the archives. This program is aired every Tuesday night, 7 Central, 8 Eastern. And our host, Sister Pamela Muhammad, always takes the time still to bless us with her contributions on Thursday night. And so I wanted to get some commentary from her on another situation in the news and before we get into the subject of tonight. And so with that, I want to give the greetings and welcome my sister, Attorney Pamela Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pamela.
Wa alaikum salam, Sister Minister Ava. Yes, ma'am. How are you this evening?
Well, I'm fine. I'm happy to hear your voice and really look forward to tonight's discussion. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, all praises are due to Allah. Thank you. And yes, ma'am, I wanted to, just as before we get started, I wanted to report on the article. As we know, Whoopi Goldberg was suspended from The View. And I'm looking at an article out of USA Today where it talked about she was suspended from The View after comments that were made during the January 31st episode. And part of what she said is, you know, they're saying how she made the comment that it was not about race. This was made during a discussion with her other co-host. And, you know, but, you know, the problem for me is that ABC News, they suspended Ms. Goldberg effective February 1st, effective immediately, because the comments that she made, it just seems like there was no protection for her. It just seems like because they didn't agree with some of what she said, because, you know, she said that she felt like someone, one of her co-hosts, the contributor Anna Navarra, she made the point that it's about white supremacy. And then Ms. Goldberg said something about, you know, she said, but these are two white groups of people. This is what the USA article is bringing up. So, again, you know, for Ms. Goldberg was suspended February 1st, and it's my understanding she has a two-week suspension. And, you know, this is in the news, and there's even an article in the New York Post that is entitled that Whoopi Goldberg is livid, and she's threatening to quit. This is the headline of that article, quit The View over her suspension. So, you know, to me, as we talk about, you know, free speech and protection, and sometimes it just seems like people just do whatever they want to black people, especially when we may say something that, you know, people just don't agree with. So she ends up being suspended. So I wanted to report on that because that definitely headline news this week. Yes, ma'am.
Yes, ma'am. Well, it's really like the beginning of a tsunami of these types of actions and reactions. And it all comes together to bear witness to what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said about white people. They are totally disagreeable to live with. And after 400 years of our blood and sweat, we still can't get along. And, you know, it's amazing. This thing is circular. It's like this just goes around and around over and over again. And it just, we're in the fullness of time. And so what black people in America and around the world are going to find, not only in our experience as a nation, but we're going to find as individuals, because individuals make up communities, which make up nations. We're going to find we can run, but we can't hide. And no matter how much, when I think of a sister like Whoopi Goldberg, who has used her comedy skills to entertain white people,
and done
everything she could to ingratiate herself to them, you know, over the years. And to your point of free speech, because she actually spoke the truth. You know, what we're now moving into, in my humble opinion, is, you know, welcome to Farrakhan's world. That
yes, ma'am.
When you speak undiluted truth, that's when you are attacked. Because the fact of the matter is, and I love this issue, because what are Jews saying now? They're not white. So are you saying Jewish is a race? She can't have it both ways. Now, you've come out here and said this. And so what message now are you sending to white Anglo-Saxon Protestant America?
Who's
very, very sensitive and very tight about white only, colored only. Are you sure this is what you want to say? But we know, in fact, they are white people. And if we study the history, and it's not for tonight because we have a panel and a topic we have to address, but there are underlying reasons why what happened in Germany happened. And there's a Jewish rabbi in New York who does lectures on it, that there's a sordid sort of a history there where the Jews were, I think going back to the 1920s, introducing these clubs and prostitution and alcohol, all this type of thing was affecting the German society. But of course, the biggest thing was the destruction of their banking system and the financial system. The sister is correct. It was not about race.
Yes, ma'am.
And yes, this man, this Adolf Hitler, who's a narcissistic sociopath himself, he did view the Jewish people as inferior, but that's a view that can be held independent of race, and it sometimes can just be a matter of propaganda. But this is something to be watched, because every one of these issues we talk about, including the one we're about to address, is bringing out the underlying truth behind things. We're in the fulfillment of prophecy and the fullness of time. And so everything has to come out. And this is why Allah's servant is described as a light-giving son. And that's what Minister Louis Farrakhan is. He's a light-giving son. Everything the son shines on is completely exposed. I don't care what you are. When you get out in the sunlight, everybody can see you and what you are. But I really appreciate that. And so with that, praise be to Allah, we're going to pivot to a news story that is dominating the headlines, and it's helping me a little bit get past my devastation over the Kansas City Chiefs losing to the Cincinnati Bengals on Sunday. I can hardly get it out. That's a whole nother story. And now the one black quarterback who was left in the playoffs is no longer there. The brother I'm about to introduce, he and I were talking about it earlier today. We could probably do a whole show on that and what's up under that. But we have a panel for you, brothers and sisters who are listening and who are logged in, to discuss this very significant landmark lawsuit that was filed on Tuesday. And so we can't have a discussion without some of our brilliant attorneys in the Nation of Islam. And one member of the panel, I think, he was just on Tuesday, right, on your program?
Ma'am, he was.
Sister,
yes, ma'am, attorney.
Yeah.
Yes.
Attorney Warren Muhammad.
All praises.
That was powerful.
All praises to Allah.
Oh my God! I took copious notes on the. It was on the medical system, and the
yes,
law,
ma'am.
And Dr. Akili Muhammad, oh, another a brilliant doctor who, I don't know anyone who has a greater command outside of the minister himself of how to eat to live than that brother. And combined with his knowledge and credentials in health, he is magnificent. But I want to welcome Brother Attorney Warren Muhammad, who I have known for many years, and he is the only person in the Nation of Islam who provided me with a PowerPoint presentation to do a Sunday lecture on separation, because he's an expert on separation. He's written books, but this brother is very powerful, very profound, and I want to say to you, welcome, Brother Warren. Thank you so much for taking time to be back on the Elevated Places Network so quick. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, Sister Ava, and the rest of the guests. Thank you so much for inviting me to be present on your illustrious show. I'm just pleased to be here. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, sir. And now, of course, is my long, decades-long friend, brother, and the general counsel to the Nation of Islam, Brother Attorney Abdul Arif Muhammad, who's also a minister as well. And Brother Arif, thank you for accepting our invitation and taking time to be with us this evening. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam, my dear Sister Ava. And as always, it's such a privilege and an honor to be with you and with your guests and, of course, with this illustrious panel of attorneys, all of us belonging to Allah and His nation. So it's a great honor and privilege to be with my brother Warren and my sister Pamela and, of course, the esteemed Dr. Abel Mohammed Esquire.
Oh, thank you. And, of course, my dear sister Pamela Mohammed, attorney Pamela Mohammed, is part of this panel. So we have two sisters, two brothers, and oh my God, I think I'm gonna try to do less talking and more moderating so that the listeners can get the benefit of the insight of the three of you. We have a nearly 60-page complaint just for the factual background. On Tuesday, February 1st, Brian Flores, and whether you know anything about the NFL football or not is irrelevant because this is critical to you. But for those of us who follow the NFL, it's even more intriguing, and we'll get into that as we talk. But Brian Flores is the former head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Now, he was just fired in January after 3 years with the Dolphins. Before he was hired by the Dolphins, he was on the coaching staff under Bill Belichick of the New England Patriots. And but this case is not predicated on his firing. This case is predicated on racism and discrimination in hiring, and really in it permeates almost everything the NFL does. But I think what's very interesting is, and I want to get some insight as we go along, this is a class action that he filed. So it's not just him. He filed it as a class representative on behalf of himself and all others similarly situated. They're demanding a jury trial. This was filed in the Southern District of New York in federal court. And all of our panelists have gone over the complaint, which has a very interesting opening. but I don't want to talk too much. I want to start hearing from the panel. And maybe, first of all, get your view overall of the significance of this case and how and the merits, as lawyers, the merits of this case. And so, Brother Warren, could you do us the honor of starting us out?
Yeah, yes, ma'am. As you said, I have reviewed the pleadings, and I have two initial observations that I'd like to get into, and one is on the pleading itself, but before getting to the actual pleading, I wanted to just kind of put into perspective the role that Brian Flores is taking in even filing this lawsuit. He said publicly that he knows that he risks jeopardizing his whole career by filing this lawsuit. And I wanted our listening audience to take that in consideration, that a man is putting his whole livelihood on the line to bring this case, not only on his own behalf, but on behalf of the class of others that are similarly situated, and also to bring to the attention that we often criticize the black athlete, but it has been the black athlete through various lawsuits that have pushed that has pushed the law forward in sports for the betterment not only of themselves and our people, but the sport itself. Going back to Curt Flood, who filed a lawsuit to overturn the reserve clause. We see free agents now. There's one here in Houston, Carlos Correa. They say he may make $300 million contract because he's a free agent. And it was because of a black man in 1969, Curt Flood, sued Major League Baseball to overturn the reserve system that basically ended his career. But in the long term, it resulted in the overturning of the reserve clause so that players could become free agents to shop their services on the market. Dale Spencer Haywood, who challenged the National Basketball Association on the right for someone to sell their services on the market to play basketball without having to wait 4 years after they finished from high school. And he challenged that and won that case and was allowed to go into the NBA. So now we see people like Kobe Bryant and LeBron James going into the NBA out of high school. It's because a black man stood up and sued the powers that be to push rights and justice forward. And I see Brian Flores in that same context in filing this lawsuit, which I think is going to bring about a sea change in the NFL.
Yeah.
So that's my initial observation in terms of context.
Yes, sir.
And, just in terms of the pleadings themselves, I only have one question that really, an observation that jumped out at me, is that I think it's a well-played pleading. I think he has a very strong case, but they pled it all in terms of discrimination, and I really wondered why they didn't also include antitrust provisions as well.
Mm.
So on page 10, they clearly say that the defendant National Football League is a trade association made up of 32 professional teams, which means as trade associations, they're subject to the Sherman Act and antitrust regulation, yet they don't allege collusion by the 32 teams, which I think the fact of their petition clearly lay out. Not only did they discriminate, but they colluded as well. So that was my initial observation on the complaint.
Chesra, I told you all about the brilliance here. And for the listeners, if you're not familiar with antitrust law, it basically means, and I hadn't even thought of that, Brother Warren, we're also dealing with a monopoly.
Exactly.
We're dealing with a monopoly. You know, there's one football league. There's one basketball league. There's one baseball league. You know, and that bears looking at very thoroughly as we walk through this. So, Brother Attorney Arif Muhammad, can you give us some initial insight into your view of this case, how you see it?
I'm most happy to. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
I'm most happy to. I have to tell you that your earlier segment, I was trying to chomp at the bit to get into that segment.
With
this Whoopi Goldberg issue. No,
you can still, it's not closed.
I wanted to just say before I go to this issue with Brian Flores that I just saw an article going back to what Sister Pamela was saying, which I thought was very, very, very powerful. The Atlantic magazine came out with an article about this whole issue and talking about Whoopi Goldberg's idea, American idea of race. That's how they call it, her idea of race.
Wow.
And as I was reading it, one of the things that I thought that was interesting is they asked the question, are Jews white? Now, see, going to Ms. Goldberg's statement, and I can't say personally that I'm necessarily a big fan of hers, but I'm a fan of her right to be who she is. And we can disagree with someone and not be disagreeable. Truth is truth when you hear it. And her point was, when she was speaking, she was actually referring to the concept of race as we understand it in America. And for us, it's white and black on the two spectrums. So with her saying that it was white to white, that's true because Jews are white. And that's true ethnically. They're white. And when you study the history of Europe, by definition, Jew is, by definition, a religion. It's the name of a religion, Judaism, and they took the term Jew from it. But their heritage and ethnicity is European. They're white, the Ashkenazi Jews, and the true Jews are the black Jews. And it's well known, but we don't have time to go into all that today. But the point is, her statement wasn't wrong. And if you study the history of Europe, you study Great Britain, you study all of these European nations, they're all white, but they fight against each other and kill each other. All this Game of Thrones stuff and all these different type of shows is about Europeans fighting Europeans.
That's
and
right.
And it's a side of the history of white people that we don't tend to be interested in. But they have been bloodthirsty against themselves long before they turned to us. So her statement wasn't wrong that it was white Germans dealing with European Jews. That's who they were. But the issue goes to this point that we're discussing now is the idea that you see black people as so inferior that you choose to spank them like they're your slaves, like they still are your slaves, and humiliate you. You follow me? We're going to give her 2 weeks off for her to reflect on what her words were. Now, people are criticizing the View by saying they made this worse by doing that because she had apologized, and even the head of the ADL said she should not be suspended. It was a teachable moment. But see, this goes to the root of the issue of what Mr. Flores was talking about, which is the insult to us, you follow me, as a people, that is still
right.
Dred Scott. The white man has, or the black man has no rights.
The Negro.
That the white man is bound to, the, right, the Negro is bound to respect. They don't care. They will insult you. And the whole issue with the NFL, no differently than Major League Baseball, which pretty much has wiped out black ball players. I'm talking about African-American ball players. They just wipe them off the page. You don't even hear about black ball players anymore. I'm talking about African-Americans from or blacks from the United States, I should say it like that. Or as the messenger say, so-called American Negroes.
Right.
You don't hear about us in Major League Baseball at all. They done wiped us out. And right. When you look at the NBA, it's the same structure. The majority of the players are black. The majority of the ownership is white. The commissioner's white. So it's the same problem. It's all right for you to tote that barge. It's all right for you to run my ball, get hit. It's all right for you to shoot that basketball. It's all right for you if I let you play on my baseball team to hit my home runs for me. But the belief still exists in terms of white supremacy. You're not smart enough to be in leadership. You're not smart enough to be an offensive coordinator. You're not smart enough to be a defensive coordinator. You're not smart enough to be a special teams coach. You're not smart enough to be a quarterback's coach. All of this is brought out in the complaint. The fact that these gentlemen brilliantly laid out the history and the pattern of apparent racism by the NFL is an excellent portrait that you can overlay to almost any of these plantation sports industries. Any of them, basketball, baseball, you name it. We're primarily the workers. We're out in the field running the ball, doing the hard labor, getting injured, getting busted up. And yet the people who are making the most money are sitting up in the luxury boxes watching you like it's like the Gladiator movie. You know, they had them down there in the arena fighting to kill themselves. That's what this is. It's the plantation gladiator syndrome. And so what Mr. Flores chose to reveal, and Brother Attorney Warren is right, if you go and study the history of black people, even in the limited achievements that we've made in sports, none of it is because they were willing to do it. There were lawsuits. There were black people who fought, who filed lawsuits. We don't have time to go into all of it. But in all of these arenas, to fight for some measure of justice, that not only ended up benefiting black people, but ended up benefiting whites as well, white sports figures as well. We're always on that front line fighting for justice. And so I'm hoping that others will join this lawsuit. We are hearing rumblings that others have thoughts in support, and maybe one or two may have something more to say about being a part of what Mr. Flores is bringing to light. But we should never lose sight of the fact that it's not just the NBA. It's all of these plantation sports industries, and it's all in corporate America. Every issue that's in there can overlay in any Fortune 500 company, can be overlaid in institutions of higher learning, scientific fields, just overlay it anywhere. It's
politics, everything.
So it goes to what we were taught. As Lincoln said, I, as any white man, prefer to be the superior, to be in charge. And that's honest Abe. And that is their thinking. They are born and they were made to rule. They are not made to submit to us. And
that's
so
right.
When you start challenging them as they see it for rulership and leadership, yeah, you can work in my field and play my sports, but I'm not putting you up in no decision-making authority with me where you're going to start to challenge me or take over ownership of what I have. This is war that is being waged. And I hope that they do expand the lawsuit. They talked about Title VII. I hope they finish with filing at the EEOC and look at adding to the claims in this lawsuit, because I think there's much there to be unpacked that would really help to bring further light to the teachings of the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Thank you.
Excellent. Well said. And, you know, to your point about the plantation system, and that's really what we're looking at tonight. Is this a plantation system? And, you know, we're taught that this nation, the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan wrote in our study course, this country was built on a doctrine of white supremacy.
This is
what America is. This is who she is. And, you know, as you all both raising, this is in their DNA. And that's why they can easily deny allegations when they're charged with being what they are. They say that's not true, because they honestly don't see it. It's part of their, as you just said, their makeup. But real quick, I want to read paragraph 4 of the complaint. And it reads, in certain critical ways, the NFL is racially segregated and is managed much like a plantation. It's 32 owners, none of whom are black, profit substantially from the labor of NFL players, 70% of whom are black. The owners watch the games from atop NFL stadiums in their luxury boxes, while their majority black workforce put their bodies on the line every Sunday, taking vicious hits and suffering debilitating injuries to their bodies and their brains, while the NFL and its owners reap billions of dollars. And this is why this is, among a multitude of reasons, this is why this is a landmark case, because this lawsuit is putting in print what is said and discussed. You know, Colin Kaepernick gave his career up. This is a country where you have to lay your livelihood and your life on the line just to point at what we're looking at and call it what it is. Because it didn't take a lawsuit. We've been talking about the NFL and these sports being a plantation system, but this is a legal document filed in the federal courts of the United States advancing that statement. So this is very significant. Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, what is your overall view of this?
Well, yes, ma'am. I agree with Attorney Warren when he mentioned the antitrust, bane of this, because as we discussed before, and I actually wrote an article in Final Call, the antitrust laws were really taken from the from the discriminatory, the private discrimination that the planters used against the blacks as we were no longer in slavery, because, again, we had built up their money. We had built up the white man's economy doing free work and free labor. So when it was time for us to be independent, they used this same type of coercive behavior, collusion, to keep us from being fairly treated. And so as you see in this case, like you said, Dr. Ava, 70% of the NFL players are black, but we don't have enough strength to become, to become the owners. You know, you can't force these this discriminatory treatment to not hold you down in positions of servitude, because this is the nature of the racist system that we've always been in, and we built America, and we're still trying to make them give us our 8 states, really. That's what we want. So I looked at the lawsuit. I thought it was fascinating when he talked about aiding and abetting. This is on page 49, how he made allegations and claims that they abated and abetted in discriminatory conduct. And that means that, you know, they got together. You know, they collectively engaged in discriminatory practices. They engaged in conduct. You know, he's making those allegations, Mr. Flores is. So this is a type of cartel behavior where we see the collusions and the monopolies, and that's what makes it plantation, because the only people that are running anything are the actual owners. And I just thought that, you know, and again, I think another perspective as to what Brother Warren was saying about how he's jeopardizing his career, and I know that I'm not in his shoes, you know, so I can't, my hat is off, you know, to him for that. But it's interesting as well as to how this is the accumulation of slavery and oppression, where this man has worked and other black men like him. They can't become, you know, they can't become the leadership, even though they're out there banging their heads. So finally, it's kind of like he's saying, you know what, it's worth it. You know, the racism, the discrimination, the collusion, I'm just going to, I'm aggrieved. You know, he's so aggrieved that he's saying, I have to fight back. And I'm so thankful to see that as well. Yeah. So I am. You know, the language, unlawful pattern and practices, you know, these are the same black code type of activities that they've always done. They switch it up and, you know, like, you know, so I don't want to get into the facts because we know that he, you know, I guess we want to bring it out as to what happened, that he did not get the job and what was discovered.
Oh,
but that,
yeah,
that was just a sham game. Sham interview. So yes, ma'am. So
yeah.
I'll say
it's unbelievable.
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh.
Yes, sir.
I was gonna say, going
right
back
ahead,
to
brother.
Both points. Here's the key. Why are there only 32 NFL teams? Why are there only 28 or so NBA teams? See, this is a classic antitrust issue, if you ask me, as Warren, Brother Warren pointed out, because they limit how many can get in.
Come on.
If you study football franchises, look how long it takes for them to do, quote-unquote, expansion teams in other markets. Look at how difficult, in the same way with the NBA, expansion teams in other markets. They don't allow that much because they have an economic interest in keeping a lid on it, and I would say particularly for the blacks. It's not as if we don't have billionaires among us, or it's not that we probably, if we focus, did not have the ability to put the money forward to get a team here or there. But the question is, access the opportunity. It's not because there are none of these people that own these franchises. They're not giving up the multi-billions of dollars that they're making.
That's right.
Because that's why they limit how many teams and how many owners. So going to the point of antitrust, breaking up that monopoly where there are other opportunities where other teams can be developed and you can have other owners, other ownership, just like they did in the radio business, like they did in other AT&T with the telephone industry. You know, at some point, that issue has to be addressed because you'll never, as you and I were talking, Minister Ava, the young brother, I think it was Ryan Clark was his name, if I'm saying it right.
Yes, Ryan Clark.
Who talked about the real answer to this problem is ownership.
That's right.
The real answer to the problem is ownership, but if there are no slots available, if there are no opportunity to even buy, so that is another big issue, it would seem to me. But
that's
it again
huge.
Goes to, it's huge, and it goes to the issue that we have to confront in terms of building for ourselves.
Exactly. More than one?
Yes, ma'am. I just, for the life of me, I can't understand why these attorneys just settle solely on race discrimination and completely avoided the monopolistic, antitrust action that could really unravel, all this whole thing, because even the owners, the existing owners have to vote in an incoming owner. So the 32 existing ones have the ability to just say, we're not going to let this nigga in. But there's one other thing I want to get to that you pointed out, Sister Ava, on number four. And I have to share with you, a lot of people don't know, but early in my legal career, I was a certified NFL player agent. And I negotiated several NFL player contracts. And I also, my company, I had a sports management company. We also did marketing for a number of professional athletes. And one of those athletes was Steve Jackson, who played for the then Houston Oilers. And I regret to have to tell you, Sister Ava, he's an assistant coach with Cincinnati Bengals, and we'll be coaching in the Super Bowl. So I'm gonna have to root for Cincinnati.
Oh no!
I just had to go there. Oh, Ava,
you just had to confess. I understand. Oh Lord. Okay, I'll just have to accept that.
On your point about the players suffering these debilitating injuries, one of the things that really jumped out to me in the complaint was further back, I think it's around number 97 and 98, dealing with the compensation for brain injury.
That was right.
Amazing, yeah.
And they talk about how even with the settlement for the concussions for brain injuries, the white supremacy sector raises its head, in which they use race norming to mitigate or diminish the claims of cognitive impairment by black athletes as opposed to white athletes.
That's right. That was unbelievable.
That really blew me away, because that was a race norm lawsuit.
Me too. Yeah.
But they say basically our brains are not as good as white people, so if we have a cognitive deficit, it's just because we're dumber to start with. I mean, that was just
exactly.
Amazing.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
That's right. That reminds me of the old Django movie, Sister Ava. Sister Ava?
Yes, sir.
Can you hear me? It reminds me of Django when Mr. Candy
Leonardo
took
DiCaprio.
Out the skull and started talking. Yeah, start talking about black people's intelligence, and you see the dimples here, and this is that mind, the feeble-minded Negro,
right.
Not having the aptitude, not having the abilities to analyze.
That's right.
And so this, and of course they laid that out in the complaint, and it's true. And they even laid out, which was even more horrific, the injustice that a lot of black players suffer who go from that CTE condition, the brain injury, and how they're
yes.
even being discriminated in regards to benefits and treatment. So all across the spectrum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's all part of that concussion settlement.
Yeah.
That's correct.
That they talk about.
Yeah, and I think
but
the brain.
To Brother Warren's point, to actually say we're using race norms to determine the amount of money, but yet you
mm-hmm.
say you're colorblind, and as they say
mm-hmm.
in the complaint, that's the very definition of racism, the assumption.
That's right.
That someone is not as smart as another person because of the color of his or her skin, it is also
yes, ma'am.
It also perhaps explains, they write, why the NFL and its teams are so loath to hire black head coaches, coordinators,
exactly.
and general managers. Just as for years, the league discriminated against black quarterbacks, which they still do.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am.
Well,
that's right. Because as you said, Sister Ava, at the beginning, if 70% of the players are black, then you should have a comparable number of, you know, of coaches, not this low, none or so they're saying that they're not smart enough, the black players are not smart enough to even be coaches or in leadership roles. That's one of the things
right.
I see.
Yeah, you have to be told what to do. And the same brother Arif referenced Ryan Clark, who once played for the Pittsburgh Steelers. He was one of them on the Super Bowl team, and he's an analyst now for,
right.
I think, on ESPN. But he said,
yes.
Either today or yesterday, he said, you know, what people aren't processing is how innate this is. He said the reason ownership is the only solution is, first of all, this is not, even though it's the NFL being sued and the NFL is like the front, it's not the NFL, it's the owners, okay?
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And these are 32 multi-billionaires, all white
mm-hmm.
and one Pakistani, and we know how racist, people from around the world are against the black man in America.
That's right.
But Ryan Clark said he has been in rooms. He's been in settings. He said these billionaire owners are so oblivious to black people because they start with how they view the players. And it comes out of this plantation system. They view the players as subhuman, like they did from the time
mm-hmm.
we encountered them in 1555. You are here to perform labor. And even though you can speak and you can hear and you stand up with two arms and two legs, they called us monkeys, chimpanzees, still do.
That's right.
Your brain capacity is severely limited. And so he said, no, they will never flow with head coaches, general managers, even the quarterback position being filled by a black man because of their view of the player, then all black people are viewed in that framework. So as you all just said, how can you coach a team? That requires intelligence. He said he has heard, they have uttered racial slurs with him and other black people in the room. And someone had to say, hey, wait a minute, what? You know, using the N-word and all of this. You know how they show it in films because that's how it was. You had black people serving them meals, walking in and out of the room, and oh yeah, well you know the niggas, they're rebellious and just
right.
Oblivious. The spook who sat by the door. You know, we are not there, and so it called to my mind in the last few days what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said to us. He told us, he chided us. He said, stop begging them to recognize you. Leave them alone.
Ma'am.
Stop bothering them with this need for being accepted. Do your own. Go get your own.
That's right.
You know, stop begging them to give you the award for the best actor in the film. Why aren't you satisfied with recognition from your own kind? And so what is wrong with us having a league? It's like the brother attorneys just said. Even if you have the money, this is how deep white people are in their racism. There are numerous black billionaires in this country, numerous black folks with hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't lack the wealth to purchase a team. They got this thing on lock. You as you all are saying, you can't just go and say, look, I got the money, I want a team. I can't just say, oh, I'm in Columbus, Ohio, or I'm in Podunk, Idaho, and I'm going to start a team. They have to let you in this league, and that would be okay were it not for the fact there's only one league. And so we have to start our own league. You know, they tried back in the 60s to have two leagues, the AFL and the NFL. And that was beat down because this is the way they protect their position. Walter Payton, okay, one of the best football players that ever lived, premier running back on the Super Bowl team of the 85 Bears, he tried to purchase a team. They took all of this lifting him up and you the man and you this and you that. But when I want to buy a team or even buy into a team, oh, no. And to your point, Brother Arf, about Django, if you all saw the movie A Night in Miami, where they chronicled the meeting, I think it was for the – was it? Were they there for the Muhammad Ali fight?
Right.
Yeah.
It was Jim
Brown.
Fight
against,
championship
yeah.
fight. But it was Malcolm, Jim Brown, Sam Cooke, and Muhammad Ali. And in one of the – in the opening scene of the movie, now here's Jim Brown, a superstar for the Cleveland Browns. This is the early 60s.
Right.
He is – since they're in Florida, the town where he grew up is not far. So he gets in his brand-new convertible – and takes a drive out to visit his hometown. And while he's there, he visits this white man who lives on a big plantation-style piece of land and with the big home, reminiscent of slavery. And this is someone who mentored him in some respects and provided, you know, his family work for this cracker. And he comes and they sit on the veranda and they drink iced tea and, you know, they, oh, you're this big success now. He's one of the most recognized names in America, Jim Brown. They're sitting there and enjoying themselves. So he said, well, you know, I got to go back to Miami. And as they're walking off the veranda to the car, the owner's daughter comes to the door. Daddy, you know, we got to move this piece of furniture. So Jim Brown says to the man, who's played by Bo Bridges, I'll help you move the furniture. He responds, oh, come on, Jim. You know we don't let niggers in the house.
Right. Right.
See?
Right.
That's who America is. Is that unbelievable?
That is unbelievable.
You,
yes, ma'am.
You cannot achieve enough, Whoopi. Oprah.
Yeah,
there you go.
You can't, yes. President Obama. You can't rise high enough to not be called a nigga.
That's right.
The respect will come when we go for self. But go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's right.
I was going to say that there's a portion of the complaint under E, discriminatory treatment of David Culley. Which,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if
oh, yes.
People outside of Houston know the real backstory on that. But they were pointing out how in many aspects, of course, they think we're dumb, but some of them know exactly who we are. And they're determined to keep us from ever rising. Because they'll fire
right.
a black coach even for being successful.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, man.
They pointed that out in numerous instances throughout the complaint, how many coaches were fired after successful seasons. And that's one of the things Flores is bringing out, that part of the reason he was fired because he refused to tank and to lose games. He wanted to be
right.
successful. But there's this coach, David Culley, that's mentioned in the complaint, who was hired. Houston's franchise is in such shambles that it's very likely that they couldn't find anyone willing to take the job in Houston as a head coach. So this brother takes the job that no one wants. It's a virtually impossible situation. And he's still
right.
with one of the worst rosters in NFL football. He manages to win 4 games.
Yep.
Which is matches the record they had the year before when they had an all-pro quarterback, Deshaun Watson. So to make a long story short, he manages to win 4 games, and they fire him after 1 year. And the media
yep.
is just all over him that he was just such a terrible coach. And I keep thinking, what was so terrible? He won 4 games after the previous white coach traded away all of the talent. But here's the kicker. Now the leading candidate for the coaching job is a white man who has never coached in the NFL or college ever in his life. And he is the leading candidate
wow.
for the head coaching job. So they weren't able to put that in the complaint because they probably didn't have him. You know, it's so recent. Fired the black man who
wow.
fought for being successful, and now they intend to hire a white man who has never coached in the NFL or college in his life. Now, how did he even get an interview, let alone get be considered to get the job?
Yeah, there's no end to them. And you know what we got to do, though, real quick? I think Sister Pamela brought up earlier, we didn't talk about the specific allegations
yes,
that Brian Flores advanced as the base for this lawsuit. So those listeners who may not be familiar, Brian Flores specifically alleges that he was interviewed for positions once he was relieved by the Miami Dolphins. Because he is so good, there were invitations. And again, going back to how this thing is run, you have to be invited to do this, invited to do that. He was invited by the New York Giants, the football team, to come up for an interview. The coach of the New England Patriots, who knows Brian Flores very well because he was one of his assistant coaches, mistakenly sent Brian Flores a text congratulating him on getting the job. But it was a Caucasian. First name is Brian also. I can't recall the last name, but it's in the complaint.
Daboll. It's Brian Daboll.
Daboll. Daboll.
D-A-B-O-L.
He
Daboll.
Had already, yes, sir. He had already been given the job.
That's right.
So going back to the word sham, 18 years ago, the owner of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who hired the man who's the only black coach in the NFL right now and has never had a losing season, been to two Super Bowls, Mike Tomlin, he said, you got to end all this hardcore racism. And they came up with something called the Rooney Rule, which is like affirmative action, where whenever a team interviews for a head coach position, they have to interview what they call a minority. Okay? So this was just satisfying that rule. But look at what you're doing. You're taking my time, my effort, the intellectual and emotional investment of coming to your city and trying to persuade you I'm the best person for the job, when you already gave it away. The deception, there's no end. So that's, and he encountered this not only with the New York Giants, but with the Denver Broncos. That's part of his
complaint.
But the other part that is turning it out, that's inescapable, is the allegation of corruption on the part of owners. And already other people are coming forward to say they had the same experience. But Brian Flores also alleged in the complaint that the owner of the Miami Dolphins offered him in 2019, his first year there, offered him $100,000 per game for every game he lost. Because they had a raggedy team when they hired him, okay? So when a team is that low on the totem pole, they start looking to, can I get a high draft pick? Because the worse your season, the higher the draft pick. They wanted to be the worst team in the league so they could get the number one draft pick. And he offered this man, who has pride in his reputation, who, as he said of himself, he said, I'm about truth, I'm about honesty and integrity, and I'm about winning. I am a gifted coach. That's what he said, Brian Flores. This man wanted to give him $100,000 a game, which in their world is like $10, to throw the game, basically. Now, you got all these athletes out here giving it everything they've got. You've got a fan base. You have families But this is what's going on. And Brian Flores told Miami Dolphins owner, that's never going to happen. And he said in his interview, from that point on, they had a strained relationship. And it just got worse. And ultimately led to him being let go this past month.
Yeah.
So,
and you know,
again, it's corruption there as well. Yes, sir, Brother Arf.
Yeah, and I see, and the thing going to this point that you're raising about paying him to throw games, right? Black
yes,
people,
sir.
All we have is our integrity. All we have is our integrity.
Come
and
on.
Our good name. And when you're going into these environments like this where there's only a few of us as blacks, you already know that the pressure's on you already. And the target is on you already. And so you have to try to perform to the best of your capability. And since the thinking about black coaches is that they're not smart, they don't know how to win, well, here is the white man offering you to lose. But the long-term effect of that is that you hurt your own credibility in the league. Because then
yes.
it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that you as a coach don't know how to win. So you
right.
end up sacrificing your good name and reputation on the altar of some money. And so this man has principle, and this is the key for us as we're taught about truth. Be true to who you are. Keep your integrity, because when you walk away, you can always know, and it will be known, that this is a man of integrity. And you have to hold your head up, and that's what I love about what he's doing. Because the downside of this owner offering him this $100,000 to be a loser is to give him the view as a professional in the league that he's not a winner. And therefore
right.
he's not able to be hired by you because you wouldn't hire a coach that's not a winner. And that and with
and
black people, they fire you
yeah.
from they fire you for winning. Look at all of the examples they
Look
bring
at
up
it.
In this complaint of hiring, of firing black coaches who were winning. So it's the same thing. There's no, it's like the same thing with the black quarterback. There's no patience with you if you don't start out being a superstar. They get rid of you. But if you're white, they'll hang in there with you. I mean, a classic example is Tim Tebow. When he was playing in the National Football League. And they were still trying to give him a job recently with the Charlotte Hornets or Jacksonville Jaguars. Well, I think
Jaguars.
That's the team. Yeah, this is how they do, but when it comes to us, we're held to a wicked and such a high standard where the whites are not held to that standard. And these coaches are white coaches that are losers, as is pointed out in the complaint. They get rotated, you follow me, to different teams and as offensive coaches, defensive coaches, and all of these different kind of things. And they are losers. But they keep them rotating. But if you're black, no. If you're not going to be a superhero and win, and even when you do, they still find a reason to fire you. This is the kind of world that we live in. Under the world of white supremacy.
May I add in also that there's another aspect of this that might be more damaging than anything to the league overall, including white folk and white players, is this marriage between professional gambling and the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there's coaches paying, I mean, their owners paying coaches to lose, how did this affect the booking line? How did this affect Las Vegas, who are setting the odds and all
mm-hmm.
these things? And there's illegal point shaving and losing going on, that whole gambling aspect could bring the whole thing tumbling down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I wanted to say. Yes, ma'am. And I just wanted to say again, when you talk about, from my perspective, looking at this cartel behavior, these monopolies, and when you put racial discrimination in this context, you know, it really is an us against them mindset, because the some of the definition of racial discrimination when you look at cartel behavior is that these groups are knitted together by ties of kinship and race. So they don't, you know,
that's
they
right.
don't have any intention of being fair. It's, you know, they want to, this whole white supremacist mindset is to further their race, to keep us
that's
down,
right.
to keep the wealth with them, and to use us to make them rich. And so,
that's right.
yeah, I just think that's very, very interesting. And on my final point with that, Brother Warren and Brother Arf, you all probably both know that the Sherman Antitrust Act is really named after, of course, John Sherman, who was part of the Reconstruction Congress. So they took that antitrust machinery, you know, from what was meant to help black people who, you know, we were the victims of monopolized racial exclusion and hatred and all that. So I just think, like you all were saying, this is really huge, huge, huge lawsuit.
It is. And before we're going to go to the phones, because when you have this type of subject and these type of panelists, the time gets away, and we're almost at the – we'll have just a little over 35 minutes left. But here is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and what we're really seeing in all of the events – in the world is the fruition of his work, his teacher's work, and of course the reality that God has been here. But listen at this statement from the minister in the Criterion, and it actually it came up in my mind listening to y'all, and I said, didn't he address this? And not only did he address this broad subject, but also what Whoopi Goldberg is in trouble for, about Jews not being white, them saying they're not white. Listen to this. This is from the Criterion. Any of you that work with and for white people, the reason you cannot get them to bow to your wisdom, even when you're better at the job than they, it's because of the way they were made. They were made to rule. So white people, wherever you find them on our planet, it doesn't make any difference what their ethnicity is. They are the same way by nature. So wherever they are in relationship to people of color, they always dominate with tyranny. And if you want trouble, just rise up with even a suggestion. They can't handle black intelligence. So in order to hold on to your job, you have to hide your growth. Because once you let them know your level of intelligence, they know they can't master you anymore, then the next step is to move you out, which is what happened to Brian Flores. And to Whoopi Goldberg, you're exactly right, as the minister said, white people. It doesn't make any difference what their ethnicity is. Like Brother Arv said, European Jews, they're still white people. So we're going to go to the phones and get some of our callers.
Let's wow.
see. We have Sister Ula, one of our
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Yeah, y'all 30 minutes into the show. You're right. I was going to say something about it, but I did want to say this. When I was a teenager, I read a book called by Upton St. Clair called The Jungle. It talked about the fraudulent practices in the football, baseball industry where they would set the game at certain points so that they would be able to win so many bets. This was all tied in with the mob. It was it's a very corrupt and highly hidden thing they've been doing forever. Because y'all mentioned a little bit about the that thing that they do with the point system. I'm in the school game one day, and the guy scored a point, and the board didn't move. So I know that they do a lot of corrupt stuff with these games. But I just wanted to thank Mr. Attorney Warren, Attorney Ara, for your contributions to the nation, Sister Ava and Sister Pamela. And inshallah, I'll let somebody else get on. Assalamu alaikum.
Oh, well, bless your heart. Thank you so much, Sister Ua. Upton Sinclair, The Jungle. That's the other thing about our program. You know, our listeners are amazing. I didn't know Brother Terrence did make it. And
Man, did I make it? Well, Dr. Ava, if I'm going to be on the planet, I got to get on the show. There's no way that I can not get on the show. And I was actually on Winston-Salem State University's campus and, you know, that other school because I'm an Aggie. But I was in the auditorium where the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan came in 1997. So there was no way, which you was there for that address, there was no way that I could not come on your show. So the spirit of the Lord said, you may make this show tonight. You better hurry up and finish hanging out with David Banner and have him finish his speech, and his MLK speech and get on to this show. So I'm just happy to be here, and I'm glad that we're having this wonderful conversation because what we're really talking about is separation, because no matter how much money you get, no matter how much you want to coach, how much you want to run up and down, we're still $1 million, even $1 billion today, slaves to this white man, no matter, like you said, ethnicity that they want to claim. When we're around white people have to rule. That's their mindset.
Amen. And I'm so glad you're here. Well, let's get some of our other callers in. We have Sister Darcelle. She has a comment. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Darcelle.
Well, alaikum salam, my dear sister. And thank you, Sister Ula, because I appreciate your sentiment. But what I wanted to mention, four things, and I'll be really quick. Uno, dos, tres, cuatro. Okay, first, I think it's really interesting and sort of ironic that Whoopi goes by the name Goldberg. Okay, I guess they don't have a patent on that. And also, that I feel with the whole betting aspect, I don't know if Attorney Wall or who brought that up. Who brought that up. When I see those commercials about putting money down, we're going to get Terry's $500,000. To me, that is crypto morality. I'm keying that, and it's branded on this show. I feel it's crypto morality, okay? Because who can really define cryptocurrency to me? As my grandmother used to say, if I can't rob it, it's not going to rob me, okay? Okay. And number three, isn't it interesting about Meta? Okay, the only thing I used to know, Meta Truth, but I guess there's something called Meta that used to be formerly known as Facebook. And their stock has been tanking. I think I've heard that theme going, you know, putting money down, $100,000 to lose a game. And unfortunately, on a more somber note, our sister who was Miss USA, a former North Carolinian who went to Wake Forest taking her life, and I just really don't want to accept it, but we have to deal with brain health and be more holistic.
That's
and I
right.
agree with Brother Terrence and others on this call, the way to really shut this down is to create our own. And if they really want to do it, a fast track with the Super Bowl, nobody shows up to perform. We're not going to play the game. It would be an ultimate shift in reality. But that's all I'd like to say.
That's right.
Okay. Okay. Oh, until next time. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, beloved. Well, you know, I was telling Brother Arif earlier, my husband said, we were so stunned at those who know the game and those who may have watched it, that the Kansas City Chiefs, who really are the best team in the NFL and have been to the last two Super Bowls, they came out in the game Sunday. They were dazzling. And in the second half, they looked like a different team. And the quarterback, the only black quarterback we had left, Patrick Mahomes, I think you said disheveled, Brother Arif, and just the players looked in a daze. See, now, you know, I my husband said, you know, I think they may have thrown this game. And my brain just couldn't process it. But the more I listened to all of you and you know, as Brother Warren just reminded us, all of a sudden now the betting is a big component of the NFL, which dominates all sports. There's no professional sport that comes close to the NFL in terms of audience reach and wealth and dominance. And so now I have to think over this of that possibility, though. I also mentioned this could also be the vaccines and the boosters. So I don't want us to dismiss those as a possibility.
Well, Ava, can I say this quickly on
that
point that you're raising?
Sure.
One of the things that you watch, if you're watching this whole thing, Tom Brady is leaving. They have to find another Tom Brady. So it's not going
to
be given
to
Mahomes
black man.
Because he's black. So they got to find another white boy to take that role, and they're banking on this guy who won the Heisman Trophy, Joe Burrow, and who now is the young second-year player who they're trying to elevate him, and you watch all the talk around him, and he is, and you see the effort to rise another white star.
That's right.
They thought it would be the other one from the Jaguars.
Josh Allen.
The young quarterback.
The
no, not that's Buffalo. I'm talking about the other one that played for Clemson, the long-haired white boy from that's down to the Jaguars.
Jacksonville
Jaguars.
The Chargers.
That's the Chargers.
Oh,
no,
him.
This is that.
I forgot he existed. Right.
Yeah, the tall,
and then
lanky,
there's the one in California,
Clemson.
Too.
Yeah, that's
Herbert. He was the number one pick, and I forgot his name. Trey Lawrence, not Trey.
Yeah.
Something like that. But, you know,
but
to
the
your
point is,
point,
they're looking for the next.
Trevor Lawrence.
What's his name?
The Great White Hope.
Trevor Lawrence is the great. That's right.
Yeah, and that's always been, they resist the quarterback position is right up there with head coach in terms of resistance to a black man because of the star power and the reputation of that position as requiring extra intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. And look how they bemoaned when the Chiefs beat the Buffalo Bills in the divisional rounds, and they cried and wept and wailed over that white boy in Buffalo not winning, not beating Patrick Mahomes, who is otherworldly.
Patrick Mahomes is otherworldly with his skills, you know. But as you're saying, they are looking for a replacement, and it has to be somebody white. So they're, God only knows what is going on behind the scenes. But I appreciate you bringing that point up, because all of this centers around what I read from the minister, and that is they were made to rule. Our scientists, Yaqub, made, it's in their DNA. Look what the minister said. Don't even have a suggestion, or they will start looking at you strange, because now they know they can't master you. Because you actually think you have an idea that is equal to or better than theirs. You know, and God help you after that. And so when Brian Flores told the owner of the Dolphins, that's never going to happen, the throwing of the game, that was the end for him. So we're gonna go to Sister Patricia, who has a question and a comment. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Patricia.
Well, alaikum salam, Dr. Minister Ava, and happy Savior's Day to everyone.
Thank you, ma'am. Same to you.
A while back you spoke about us living near water, and could you kind of elaborate again on the reason for that? And also, I'm down here in Central Georgia, and I was in Kroger's. And the way that they have these masks that they're supposed to be giving out, I mean, they just like thrown in a bag in this little carousel. And I was like, shouldn't this be a little bit more sanitized, or, you know, more sterile situation? It's just like a big old freezer bag and just thrown in there and then grabbing at them. Like, I mean, to me, that should be a red flag. Like, don't use these. They look like they were dirty. The bag looked dirty.
Yes.
It didn't look clear and crisp. And so this is what they're giving out to the people to put
yes,
over
ma'am.
Their mask after they've soaked them in something. And I believe, you know, this is my theory that they have done that, you know. And so I just want people to be aware of this. You know, this is not no prize that you get. If they're in a dirty plastic bag, that should let you stay away from it. Matter of fact, take them and throw them in the wastebasket. But, you know,
that's exactly
what I have observed when I was out and about. Thank you, ma'am.
Oh, thank you, Sister Patricia. And real quick, because these are two subjects, the water and the mass, that we're going to get into in depth. We were blessed for our national correspondent to recently interview, very extensive interview, of a black woman who is a cellular biologist. And she explained on a deep scientific level what is wrong with the mask wearing. It's particularly the length of time that we've been doing this. So we'll save that for another time. But you are so right. And we reject and should reject anything that the United States government or any of these companies are so-called giving to us for free. And I'm glad you made that observation. And then quickly, you know, our bodies are 75% water, next to air, which the mask interfere with the intake of fresh air, with devastating consequences that you'll learn about shortly. Next to air, the most essential element to live is water. And we have to not only have access to clean, fresh drinking water, we need to be exposed as much as possible to bodies of water, because this has a profound effect on the brain, which is largely water, and it supports us and sustains us in these colonies that we call ghettos, but the minister said they're colonies. We are held in these areas with invisible fences, but we live in concrete. Every effort is made to make sure that our facilities. If you notice, when a black school is built, high school, elementary, whatever, they more resemble correctional facilities than someplace pleasant that you would want your child to be in. All of this is as we've been talking all evening, everything is by design. But we need access to grass, to trees, to water, to fresh air, because as human beings, these are the elements that the God made us to require in order to sustain our life. But thank you so much for that. And we're gonna go to Brother Hoyle, who has a comment right out of Memphis. One of our top fishermen, Brother Hoyle.
Thank you, Sister. Alaikum Salaam and the beautiful guests and beautiful with Arif and attorney, the other brother Warren and Sister Pamela. This is beautiful. You know, we're getting chastised by Allah with an ice storm. Got two or three trees down in my yard
now.
It's horrible, sister. It is. That's the work of our God and our Christ. So we just what we're taught. We be prepared. Get our survival kits. Store up the food and water. And unite. So all of this whole area, they're calling it Landon. They got a name for it, Winter Storm Landon. You know, so I just came through Arkansas, coming from Texas. I ran right into it. But, I mean, trucks jackknifed everywhere. But, beautiful topic. I wanted
to
say
this. Are you home yet?
Yes, ma'am. I made it home. Thanks
okay,
a lot.
Good.
I got two trees down. I got
to
sit down in the morning. And
yes,
I wanted
sir.
To tell you, you know, did you know, Sister Ava, that going to Whoopi Goldberg, I was listening this morning on a talk show. She gets over $90,000 a week. And, you know, but a couple of celebrities, everybody's, you know, waking up to this, you know, because I guess the more we wake up and see that we're the true Hebrews and Christians and Muslims and you know, I guess it's going to take a time for the conscious black people to wake up. Anthony Anderson said something about it too, and Brother RZA, Brother the minister Abdul Halim out of Houston had a beautiful article on it. And but the sports deal, this I wanted to go to this. Muhammad Ali said, always said, you still a what? Y'all know what it is. He told Minister Farrakhan, you still a, and Minister Farrakhan said, please don't say that. Still a, you know, so, you know, I want to say this, you know, here with this coaching situation, I heard that when they brought that up, Sister Ava, you brought it up, that he already, he accidentally called him to congratulate this other coach who was already, he wasn't a coach. Yeah. But this has been going on. They've done the coaches. You know, we got Penny Hardaway as a coach, as the college basketball team here. They're ready to fire him. They're on his case, Sister Ava. Penny Hardaway's team, most of the team has been out because of COVID, and they're young players. And he said he told them, he cursed them out. You know, made the ESPN because he said a few choice words to them, which I don't blame him. I probably would have been worse. He probably would have suspended me if I but I mean, he told him, he said, you know, I have half of my team is out, you know. And this racist reporter came up to him and said, well, you don't I think you're about to get fired or something into that aspect. And you know, it just triggered something. But like
yes,
I said,
sir.
We've always as coaches and players. And you said this, Sister Ava, and I never forget. You said, no matter how much money blacks make in the NBA, NFL, as workers, they won't be a landowner or permitted to build or invest in any wealth they can pass down to their children. And you said while black ownership would be easy, don't get excited about somebody black buying the team. The majority of the power still rests in the whites and a single black owner, and it doesn't change an institution. So separation, we got to go back. Look at the black leagues when we had our black baseball league. They were envious, totally envious. We had a Memphis Red Sox team here in Memphis, and I remember my parents and grandparents talking about that. They had concessions. They had food. You know, people dressed in their Sunday best. A lot of money was made. You know, they had look at the
it
Harlem
was an
Globetrotters.
Industry.
Yes, man, an industry. Yes. We had black basketball leagues. You know, anything that we own, they study and take it over and run it. Because, like you said, business
That's
is warfare.
Correct.
So separation.
That's right.
Is
yes,
a log from make
That's
us separate.
Solution.
Yes, ma'am. So I'm going
to
let
Praise
somebody else talk.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sister May. Allah bless you. Assalamu alaikum, family.
Wa alaikum salam. Yes, sir. Yeah, this is an endless cycle that we're never going to make any progress. But the beauty, and I think why all of us wanted to talk about this lawsuit, and you mentioned it to me earlier, Brother Arif, is it's a powerful historical document. You know that you hear from time to time, oh, it was not until so many years that they had their first black quarterback. I mean, you could actually take this complaint and use it in a classroom to teach the racist history of the NFL.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And the racist history of America, because you can overlay those
right.
timelines of histories of deprivation in many industries that where we have suffered, whether it's corporate America, Major League Baseball, NBA. I mean, I know people can't even imagine a time when the NBA was all white. They didn't
Come
have black
on.
Players. They didn't allow black players.
That's right.
There was a time when college football was all white. You didn't have black players in the South. They were at the HBCUs, only at the black schools. And it wasn't until Alabama, I think Alabama played USC, and Sam Cunningham's older brother was a running back. And they killed them. That was Bear Bryant. And they killed Alabama, destroyed them. And Alabama was one of the last white teams that finally brought a black person on. Now you can hardly find a white person on Alabama's team. And so now the blacks have become, because of their superstar athleticism, the money makers for these white owners and white colleges, whether they're universities or whether they're professional teams, it's the same complex in the same scenario.
And, yeah. And you're bringing to mind this system that we talk about with coaching and what they call the tree, where they keep things in families and in a tight social circle. It goes back to the other thing we have to look at, and your point about being driven out of baseball, see the condition that we live in. As you said, Brother Ark, it's America. The condition we live in works against us from childhood. And one thing that you see in the NFL, as star athletes are emerging who are of higher and higher skills, they're doing everything they can to hold on to that. And these young white boys you see coming into these positions now, they've been playing the game since they were 3 years old. There's a structure that they have in place, Little League baseball, Pop Warner, and all of this kind of thing. This thing is structured from early childhood. And then they draw their players from the colleges. very rarely can you come off the street and get in the professional league. I don't care how gifted and talented you are. It's very rare. And there are certain universities and colleges that they call feeder schools that dominate the league. So that, for example, in the NFL, you have a school like LSU. They produce wide receivers. They produce quarterbacks. Then these white quarterbacks like this Joe Burrow and the Bengals are going to Super Bowl. He asked for Ja'Marr Chase. They played together at LSU. That was his man at LSU. But you take a star like Russell Wilson, the quarterback for the Seahawks, he's void of any real talent around him. And so that's an excellent point you're bringing up, that this thing is so on lock. And rather than beat on the door, and as Brother Hoyle said, if we do buy a team, the Denver Broncos are for sale. If we get a team, that doesn't change the root truth that is here. And that is, as I always say, the highest law in the land is not the U.S. Constitution. It's white supremacy. They change laws if we begin.
That is correct.
To make progress. Yes. So we're running low. Yes, sir, Brother Warren.
Yes, ma'am. Going to Brother Hall's point on the Negro League, I just happened to be doing some research earlier today, and I came across I think it's a law review article in 1987 by the New Mexico School of Law. And it says that the Major League Baseball's monopoly power and the Negro Leagues. And one of the points that I wanted to raise out of it, going to the nature of people, they talked about how Major League Baseball enforces monopoly power through this reserve clause that Curt Flood eventually challenged. But they were able to lock up all the talent through these contracts. And they just noted how the Negro League players and owners, for the most part, operated on handshake agreements. And they had no such reserve clause. So players were free to leave and go and pursue their best interests on the open market within the Negro League structure, because they – abhorred any inkling of slavery and restraint of freedom and impinging on their humanity. So I just wanted to mention that particular article and the fact that
that's beautiful.
When we do it, you know, it takes on a whole different paradigm from when those who are in their nature want to oppress and subdue in the way they do it.
And they all know they're deceivers, even of each other. You're right. They don't think and behave. And that's why we need to be by ourselves. Let me try to get this call in, because we're really running low. Brother Elijah calling us out of Dallas. Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam, ma'am.
How are you?
We have to remember trillions and zillions of dollars are being made in sports. But it all goes back to the 60s. There was a man who started the million-dollar athlete, and that man's name was Elijah Muhammad.
Come on, bro.
Muhammad Ali. Muhammad Ali. A Negro fighter by the name of Cassius Clay came to a man named Elijah Muhammad.
Come on,
athletes were making minimum wage, McDonald's money, $5-$10 an hour, until a man named Elijah Muhammad said, "No, brother, you tell them to give you millions of dollars, brother." And as a spiritual teacher, Elijah Muhammad told Muhammad Ali to stop boxing. Was Elijah Muhammad a hypocrite? No. Elijah Muhammad used sports as a replacement to slow down lynching. Those 40, 50, and 60,000 white people that come to the stadium, they would come to the stadium. They used to come to see, that amount of people used to come to see a black man lynched.
That's right.
And
that's exactly right. It was a sport.
Stop me if I'm lying. If anybody thinks I'm lying, just Google Without Sanctuary. There's a book called
Without
Sanctuary.
No, we know that history.
Yes, ma'am.
Sir.
And see, we're missing the main point. What killed Muhammad Ali? There's one of the most valuable movie properties is a movie called Rocky by Sylvester Stallone. Where did that come from? That comes from Sylvester Stallone going to a Muhammad Ali fight and fantasizing about a white man beating him.
Right.
And in Rocky III, he made a character called Apollo Creed, and it kind of rhymes with Muhammad Ali in a strange kind of way.
Yes, sir.
And what happened to Apollo Creed or Muhammad Ali in Rocky IV? He gets killed. So Stallone was wishing the death of Muhammad Ali, even though he made billions of dollars off of him.
Yes, sir.
And what killed Muhammad Ali? What killed Muhammad Ali was sports, taking hits to the head. And the main point we're missing is when you're an NFL player, the average man lives to be 69. I work in the NFL. The average man lives to be 69. The average NFL player lives to be 52.
Brother Elijah, I'm going to ask you to call in early next week because we're down to about 2.5 minutes, and I've got to close out the program. But these are extremely powerful points you're making. I don't know if you were on at the top of the program when we were going through the complaint and talking about the concussions and the brain injury.
Yes, ma'am.
To the players, but I thank you for bringing the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and lifting his name and what he revolutionized in the whole world of sports, because that's absolutely true. But thank you so much.
Ma'am.
All right, beloved.
Assalamu
alaikum. That is excellent insight, and that's why we call this the Elevated Places. So down to about a minute and a half. If any of you had a 30-second closing, and if not, then I want to personally thank these three brilliant attorneys for the nation. They're not just brilliant; they stand with the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, Brother Attorney Warren Muhammad, and our General Counsel, Brother Abdul Arif Muhammad. I want to thank the three of you. I want to thank our Executive Producer, Sister Rona Muhammad, who makes this program happen each and every week. Brother Terrence Muhammad, and he has called into this show from islands, and he's been in Alaska, the Fiji Islands, and he's just amazing. And, of course, I want to thank each and every one of you who call in and take part in the discussion, and the many more of you who log in and listen on blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. I don't have to tell you to remember, but I'm going to repeat it anyway. Savior's Day, February 27th. That's Sunday, February 27th, 1 p.m. Central. Go to NOI.org. The Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan will address the world live from Mosque Mariam. His message is entitled The Swan Song.
May Allah bless us all with love and the light of understanding. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow.
Wa alaikum
assalam.
Wa alaikum assalam.